After a rocky week of voting repeatedly on who would replace Democrat Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, House Representatives and new Speaker Kevin McCarthy opened this week by targeting the Internal Revenue Service. With their first policy vote after getting a slim majority in the House, Republicans introduced a bill that would rescind more than $70 billion in funding for the IRS over the next 10 years. It's out of a total of $80 billion that Congress approved for the agency as part of the Inflation Reduction Act passed last year. The Democratic-controlled Senate probably won't take up that bill, but the move in the House demonstrates a priority to cut funding for the federal tax agency. It may not be the last attempt of its kind. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the current funding level, staffing level, capacity of the Internal Revenue Service? Do you support stripping some of that new IRS funding away? Do you think it should hold on to what it's been given? Have you interacted with the IRS lately, tried to call in, say, did you get an answer? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephen Rosenthal is a senior fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. He researches, speaks, and writes on a range of federal income tax issues with a focus on business taxes. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about this funding that's in stake. We've talked about it a little bit in the past, this Inflation Reduction Act money that went to the IRS. What was it supposed to do?
Well, that money was supposed to bolster the IRS's efforts both to serve taxpayers and to enforce the tax law, about half and half. The IRS needed a whole bunch of modernization, and they also needed a lot of personnel replacement because the IRS workforce is aging. And, you know, interestingly enough, the IRS has been loaded with more and more responsibilities over the last decade or so, with less and less budget. So it needed help.
There's been talk of adding 87,000 new IRS employees. In calling for this funding cut, employees cross that out, replace it with agents. Republicans say 87,000 agents are being added under this funding. Can you sort out that distinction for us?
Well, there's a lot of mythology around the 87,000 number. At least you didn't say the 87,000 would be armed and packing. Mm-hmm. But the 87,000 includes customer service reps, tech workers, as well as agents. Only about half of the money would be going to enforcement side of things. And so I would imagine far fewer than the 87,000 would go for enforcement. And only about 3% of IRS agents are special agents with guns. And so I think the images conjured up of a new force of IRS agents running roughshod over taxpayers is exaggerated.
Let's talk about some of the problems the funding was supposed to help solve. First of all, backlogs with the IRS. I mentioned I invited people to say if they'd had trouble reaching the IRS. I did. I had a kind of a basic question, and it took a lot of phone calls. What are we seeing when it comes to backlogs with taxpayers trying to call in, tax preparers trying to call in, and not always getting through?
Well, backlogs have been a disaster. Unopened mail has been a disaster. Tax refunds. People have waited years for refunds. The IRS is making some progress to reduce the backlog reported today, and I expect that progress will be accelerated with more money. The IRS is already spending some of that money, part of the $80 billion, for this next year, this 2023 audit season. And so, tax return season. And so I think we've seen some help, and we'll see more in the months to come and presumably in the years to come as well. But it's been a real problem. That's the service element of Internal Revenue Service. Of course, there's also the enforcement element.
We're talking to Steve Rosenthal from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., looking at IRS funding, some new funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. House Republicans voted to cancel much of that funding. symbolic mostly because the Senate probably won't. There could be efforts in the future, though. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Joe is with us in Eau Claire. Joe, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My main concern with funding being stripped away is the inability to enforce large corporations paying their fair share of taxes. When we consider the infrastructure, whether that's roads, schools, and any number of public, transportation options, all of the things that our tax money goes to support, we continue to hear of these large corporations that are not paying taxes. And so my main concern, if this funding were to go away, is, is that even a viable thing to hold these large corporations accountable? That's just my comment, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Joe, thanks for the call. Steve, you just mentioned there's also the enforcement side of things. What do you think about Joe's concerns about corporate tax enforcement in particular?
Joe focuses on a key problem, that the IRS has been outgunned by corporations and wealthy business owners who have complicated returns, and the IRS just can't deal with them. The Biden administration pledged as part of the legislative process that the enforcement dollars would target large corporations and wealthy individuals and not target those making less than $400,000. Now, mind you, that pledge not to target those making less than $400,000 is a hard one to abide by because sometimes people report very little income and they might have $800,000 of taxable income, but they've hit out. And so there's a little gloss on the Biden pledge to sort of look at historic levels and to do some nuanced massaging of who might yet be in that higher income range. But for sure, Joe flags the key issue. What do we do about these large corporations, wealthy businesses, rich individuals, who effectively are audit proof because the IRS can't figure out how to audit them?
Thanks for the call, Joe, at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our caller, Steve, you wrote a recent piece for the Washington Post looking at the release of former President Trump's tax information. And you write in that piece, there are things in those tax filings that show a need for more of this kind of enforcement of wealthier individuals and corporations.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway from Trump's taxes is that the IRS struggled to audit him. In the 6 years that the committee asked for Trump's tax returns, in the first presidential year, only one agent was assigned to the task. And he was so overwhelmed that he basically outsourced the initial take on whether the income and deductions were correct to Trump's own tax preparers, Trump's accountants and lawyers, agent reasoning that these were reputable people and that the agent didn't have the resources to look at each of Trump's deductions. And so it got a little better in the latter couple of years in that there were a couple more agents assigned, three more agents assigned to the task. But throughout this period, we saw an IRS that was basically outgunned by President Trump. Part of the problem is Trump has had a particularly complicated and sprawling empire. And so just trying to get your arms around that was very hard. Of course, on the other side, people have wondered how Trump pays so little taxes, at least as reported by the New York Times. Year after year, Trump reports zero or negative income and pays trivial amounts of taxes. From 1985 to 2018, he had either zero or negative income. People have wondered about that. And you might have thought as president, the IRS would take a closer look as part of the presidential audit program, but they didn't. They didn't follow their own manual to conduct an expedited or even a comprehensive audit as best we can see.
We're talking to Stephen Rosenthal, senior fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. We're looking at funding for the IRS after House Republicans recently voted to cut recently added funding for the agency. That change unlikely at this point to pass in the Senate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how the IRS works, how this funding affects it, what's at stake if it were to be removed? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Stephen Rosenthal, senior fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. House Republicans voted this week to rescind tens of billions of dollars from IRS funding that Congress passed last year. We're looking at what the IRS is using that funding for, what losing it might mean for the agency and for federal revenue. You could join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Dan is with us in La Crescent, Minnesota. Dan, hi.
Hi. I just have a comment. Thanks for taking my call. I find it interesting that Republicans want to defund the police when it's the kind of police that go after their rich friends for cheating on their taxes.
Dan, thanks for the call. Steve, it's not a complete defunding, but it's a rescinding recent funding. Do you think there's a comparison there?
So look, I really struggle with the Republican demonization of the IRS. I think the prior caller flagged the fact that we all rely on taxes that the government raises to pay for the services we demand. As Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, taxes are what we pay for a civilized society. And I think the notion of beating up on the IRS and demonizing IRS employees tends to cause the IRS to perform worse, attract fewer people. And the consequence is some of the people calling for the initial cuts use that as an excuse to cut even further. Look, we need to punish the IRS because it fell down on the job. There was a slippage. That cycle has been going on since 2010, when the Republicans last took control of the House of Representatives and started gutting the IRS. It happened over the last 12 years or so until Congress replenished a lot of the IRS resources with this $80 billion. In real terms, the dollar IRS budget fell by 23%, and the enforcement budget fell by 26%. That's a real problem, and I think the Democrats tried to take steps to reverse that cycle and that decline. Unfortunately, the first legislative act that the new Republican-controlled House did was to rescind almost all of the $80 billion. I think it's absurd. I get the talking point, beating up on the IRS, is an easy target, but I think we need more serious politicians to tackle the problems our country faces, including raising the money to pay for the services that we all rely upon.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I always pay my taxes and I always vote, so I have a right to an opinion on this topic. I'm curious. I understand our total deficit is over $22 trillion now. I may be wrong. But I wonder what the budget is for the Department of Revenue, the IRS, and what percentage of the money they collect actually goes into the U.S. Treasury. I wonder if you can tell me that. Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Steve?
Well, there's a difference between the deficit and the debt, and $22 trillion sounds more like the national debt.
Right.
As far as the annual deficit, I've forgotten whether it's like $300-400 billion a year now. And as far as the IRS share of the overall budget that's spent every year, again, I don't have those numbers at my fingers. It's certainly sizable, but the money that the IRS raises is spent across the whole government. The IRS does not use its revenue to support just the IRS, but supports like our environment, environmental protection and cleanup, our defense system, various social programs. And so the IRS is not using the money just for itself. Interestingly, If we applied a cost benefit analysis, I think for every dollar that we give the IRS to enforce the tax laws, we get something like $12 or $13 back. Now, that's not the right measurement that it's profitable to give money to the IRS, because of course it imposes a burden on the taxpayers who have to, you know, provide information to the IRS and deal with requests from the IRS. But still, you could see the IRS is a profitable enterprise. It's just a necessary service in my mind.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Ron joins us now in Thiensville. Ron, hi.
Hi there. You know, my question is, you ever try to call the IRS? Well, you can stay on the phone forever, and you'll never talk to anybody. There's nobody there. And if you have a little problem going and you get a letter and you kind of write back and this and that and the other thing, it takes you about a month or a month and a half between every communication, and you can't have any specific person to talk to. So defunding the IRS is ridiculous. And the fact is, it's what I think it is, it's just a big little green light for the tax cheaters. And they'll say, and it's great for those folks, but for the people that, honest people that want to pay their taxes and have questions, you're in trouble.
Ron, thanks for the call. Ron, as we were talking earlier, Steve, not alone facing that backlog. We've covered that a little bit. Ron worried, though, that less funding, fewer audits, he says, a green light potentially for tax cheats.
Right. When we collect fewer taxes from those who try to hide their income, that shifts more taxes to those who comply with the tax law. And so beating up on the IRS and making it easier for rich people and others to hide their taxes mean the rest of us pay more. I would just point out one tip. There is a taxpayer advocate out there that if one of your listeners gets stuck trying to reach the IRS, oddly enough, a decade or so ago, we added this taxpayer advocate office to help taxpayers deal with the IRS. I personally might have just wanted more money for IRS service representatives to answer phone calls, but we now have an additional layer of advocacy as another solution.
Thanks for that call, Ron. Keith is with us now in Minneapolis. Keith, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
I just wanted to make a comment that's consistent with what your guest is saying. All those middle, low-income taxpayers who in primary income is wage and salary income, they're paying 100% of the tax due on that income because that income is reported to the IRS. And if it doesn't show up on their tax return, the IRS easily catches that due to the fact that the employer has already reported that income. It's all the non-documented sources of income, sales of assets, some stocks, and other items that are never caught. And that's the sort of income that primarily is earned by very affluent persons, which frankly I am, but the taxpaying public just doesn't seem to get it.
Keith, thanks for the call. Steve, what do you think?
Keith is right. The average worker's taxes are open and shut. They get a W-2, so does the IRS. They get a 1099 reporting their interest and investment income, so does the IRS. 99% of the taxes due are paid. Keith also makes a good point that business owners, especially those in the cash and the new gig economy, their compliance level is really bad. More than half of the income that they receive goes unreported, omitted, for every IRS study over the last couple of decades. That's a real challenge. Although it's funny because there was a dust up. I don't know, Rob, if you saw the new expanded 1099-Ks that would have required PayPal and Venmo to start sending more information reports for commercial transactions. That got a lot of people up in arms because they thought their side gigs would now be reported to the IRS. Their side gigs were always taxable. They were just able to hide the income from the IRS. And I can understand, I'm sympathetic somewhat, like, hey, if you're just, you know, earning a few hundred extra bucks, or a few hundred thousand bucks, a few thousand bucks as a side gig, you know, why make a big deal out of it? But the real problem to think through is every time a dishonest taxpayer omits income, that means the rates are higher for the honest taxpayers in order to collect the taxes that we need. And so we ought to make a fair decision for everybody as to what they owe, and then making sure to collect what they owe.
Thanks for that call. Steve, just in our last minute, this House vote probably going to go nowhere in the Senate. Are you concerned, though, that when there is a spending bill, a must-pass spending bill, or a debt ceiling increase, we might be revisiting this conversation about cutting this funding again?
Yes, Rob, I'm very concerned by that. On its own, the Senate will not rescind the $80 billion. However, these House Republicans are very agitated, and they've threatened to hold the global economy hostage and our domestic budget hostage unless they get what they want. And so there's a big question as to if the Republicans hold the debt ceiling hostage, not lifting the debt ceiling for prior obligations that have already been committed by Congress, if they don't lift that, then the full faith and credit of the U.S. government may fail, the global economy may fail. And so we'll have to see how that scenario plays out. The House Republicans adopted as a rule that they must demand spending cuts as part of the increasing the debt ceiling. Biden has announced that he's not going to give any concessions as part of the increase of the debt ceiling. So at the moment, we're on a collision course.
Steve, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Stephen Rosenthal, senior fellow with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center in Washington, D.C. Joined us to talk about the state of funding for the IRS, what it needs, what it's getting, and what House Republicans this week voted in favor of taking away.